Bitcoin has never seen the light of day. It's never seen massive usage. And it's only really starting in El Salvador, which is something I also talked about. Bitcoin is now being introduced to the world, and it's a freaking disaster.
It is. Vigilantes, I'm very happy to have Luke Smith with us. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. It's great to be here.
I know. It's great to have you here. And Mr. X is probably geeking out watching this like, oh, dude, look at Luke. Like, everyone at the Crypto Vigilantes is really happy with the work you're doing and for teaching people about Monero and about sound money. So today you talked about the Unix philosophy. What is that?
So the Unix philosophy is just the general rule in computing, okay? So the Unix operating system, which basically every website you connect to is running some kind of Unix, okay? And the idea behind it is instead of building giant programs that do everything, like Microsoft Word kind of things, you want to be in a computer environment where you have little programs that interact in a complex way. So in general, when I use programs on my computer, I use tools that interact and I build scripts on top of that to really get what they call extensibility. Like, you can build new things on top of it. But today I briefly mentioned the Unix philosophy, actually in a bad way, because one problem with Bitcoin is that, you know, Bitcoin tries to function like the Unix philosophy. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, Bitcoin secures value, it's like a proof-of-work system, and it has digital scarcity.
You mean in the way they're trying to scale Bitcoin?
Let's compare it with Monero.
Yeah.
So with Monero, you have scarcity, you can send things to people, you know, you don't have massive transaction fees, you have privacy, you have all these other kind of things. And all of that really needs to be, this is partially what I argued, all of that needs to be in the same system, right?
Right.
But a lot of Bitcoiners will try to use the Unix philosophy to say, oh, well, you know, Bitcoin, it sucks for transactions, or it sucks for privacy, but we'll just build stuff on top of Bitcoin.
Yeah, they want a layered approach.
Right. So yeah. In general, I love the Unix philosophy, and I think it's very important for computing. But when it comes to Bitcoin, like, you really can't separate a currency's function. It needs to be scarce, it needs to be private, it needs to be fungible. These are necessary things that any currency needs.
Yeah. And it's like that simplicity in design. Like, we were talking about, just someone made a comment here, you know, the fact that Monero is plug and play, ready to go,
right?
Private by default, where it's elegant in design in a way where it's just easy to use, whereas they're trying to just like build on top of it, of Bitcoin, and you kind of lose an aspect of the network topology of having money being that which brings us together, comes forth from the way it is built from the ground up by having something simple and easy to use, private by default, like Monero.
Sure, yeah, and the thing with Bitcoin is if you want to use it like a currency, and I posted slides and people saying goofy things about this in my talk, you have to use all these other tools. You have to use CoinJoin. You have to use a non-KYC exchange. You have to do all these kind of, I mean, you need to use non-KYC with Monero as well, but even getting Bitcoin from a KYC exchange is a permanent liability. You have to use all these other tools that screws things up for the users. Monero is complicated in its system in terms of, you know, we have ring signatures, we have stealth addresses, but for the user, it's very easy.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about all that kind of stuff. You send money to someone and it gets there, and it's not obvious on the blockchain where that comes from. So that's the big difference between Bitcoin and Monero. Like, Bitcoin pretends that they can get away with only having this and building things on later. And one of the things I talk about is the fact that Bitcoin, because it doesn't have all these functionalities in it, it is easy to exploit it. It's easy for Visa and MasterCard and the government to jump in and say, well, we're going to use all of our systems that are know your customer, that are proprietary, that are spying on people, that are doing all these things. And it's cryptocurrency. That makes it cool. No, that sucks. Like, if you're using a system that's 99% spyware, or even 1% spyware, the whole system is spyware. That's the thing people need to remember.
Yeah, it's interesting that, okay, why is it that people in BTC still say that BTC is fungible in private. Like, they're saying it, like Andreas Antonopoulos just said it last week. I want to get your take on this, because it's very frustrating for me to see, now it's at the point where I'm like, okay, these guys should know better by now. What's going on here?
Well, there's one big thing that most Bitcoin maxis have in common with no-coiners, like people who have never touched cryptocurrency, is it's that neither of them have ever actually used cryptocurrency.
Wow.
Like, Bitcoiners, they have Bitcoin, they've sat on it, maybe they're billionaires, I don't know. Maybe they've made lots of money just holding on to it, but Bitcoin has never seen the light of day. It's never seen massive usage. And it's only really starting in El Salvador, which is something I also talked about. Bitcoin is now being introduced to the world, and it's a freaking disaster.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know if you talked, I think I overheard you talking to the speaker before about that. But in El Salvador, the government is having you sign up for a Know Your Customer application to use the Lightning Network.
Wow.
You have to scan your ID, all of these kind of things. Now, theoretically, you can use Bitcoin the right way, and I'm all for that in El Salvador. So that I view that as a development. But how Bitcoin is coming to people is really is a poison pill.
It is.
So like, the reason people can still say that if they're Bitcoiners is because they've never used it in real life. They don't, like, this is something that's totally, like, we take private currency for granted, because although we will say, you know, oh, MasterCard or Visa, they're not really private systems because Visa and MasterCard can monitor you. Yeah, that's true, but they're infinitely more private than Bitcoin, because Visa and MasterCard don't post your transactions on a website. That's what Bitcoin does when it submits something to the blockchain. So people aren't even used to a surveillance currency like Bitcoin, so they don't even see what kind of bad things can come from that.
This is horrible. I can't believe, like, that this is happening. It's like that. What you just said, people are not even used to a surveillance coin like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, humanity has not experienced this.
It's
literally, they've sold fake freedom, and it's actually, it's become something nefarious. Because literally what's happened in El Salvador is that they gave people a system of mass surveillance.
Yeah.
And it's so messed up.
Yeah. And it's important to remember that intentions don't matter, okay? So a lot of Bitcoiners, like, they would agree with us on basically everything in terms of privacy and security, but, you know, even if, let's say, the president of El Salvador has the best intentions, it really doesn't matter. If you're setting up a system that is all closed-source software and, you know, the government has control of this kind of stuff, or really the government, the El Salvadorian government, you know, has a U.S. company guard their custodianship, which is even more absurd, but when you have that kind of stuff...
Their liquidity, actually.
Yeah, it really is crazy. So a lot of Bitcoiners, and I think most Bitcoiners mean well, and they really do think that they're in a revolution. But the issue is, you have to get everything right. Like, when you're creating a global standard, you have to be a perfectionist. Because if we put in place a standard that has just little flaws, those flaws will become our future, right? A lot of those of you familiar with software projects, this is often the case. If, you know, a software project from the 80s had this minor bug, a lot of times it doesn't get fixed. And we build other software on top of it to solve its deficiencies. And that's basically what layer 2 is on Bitcoin.
It is, 100%. Yeah. Do you see why we like this guy?
I don't know.
You express yourself very good. I mean, and you're telling the truth. And it's just, I had a debate with a Bitcoin maxi the other day. I realized I don't have the temperament to put up with liars, whether they are knowingly lying or not. I can't stand that. It's this is too important.
Yeah. A lot of Bitcoiners, you know, they think they're arguing against, you know, a normie out there who doesn't know anything. And they're very confident. Like, Bitcoin is, in its original form, like, Bitcoin is revolutionary. The proof of work system, the fact that you can send money permissionlessly, those are earth-shattering things. The only issue is there are these details that are wrong, and before, I don't want Bitcoin to take over as some kind of global world currency unless these problems are principally solved. Not that we have patches on top.
But they're not going to be solved.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very unlikely. Bitcoin is very slow to adopt any kind of change, and that is, there's an argument to be made that that's a good thing. It's good to be very conservative. And Monero actually is like that. One thing that, you know, I mentioned
and again, Rose mentioned, is we would like to see Monero use ZK SNARKs, right? Zero knowledge proofs. And I want to see that eventually in Monero, but thankfully, and this is a good thing, the Monero team is very slow to adopt things. They want to make sure that this is, you know, absolutely fault-proof technology before we, you know, put people's money on it. And so Bitcoiners have the same mindset, but they're very dogmatic in terms of no hard forks ever, no principle changes. We have to have, and they're pitted now in these arguments against people like us, and their egos are staked on it now. So now it's even worse.
Which is, it's funny, because it's like, look, guys, it's... The Monero community is extremely well-meaning. Like, I when I come to Monero events, I honestly feel like sometimes I'm walking into a monastery.
Yeah.
Because everyone here is so focused and pure on their intention.
Yeah.
And we're here for the same reason. So I want to ask you about Pirate Chain.
Yeah.
Because Pirate Chain has been a project that just said, you know what, let's adopt zero knowledge proofs by default now. And the Monero community has been very much the way you described it. Whoa, that's very new cryptography. Right. We need to peer review it very, very well. So Monero community is very cautious, which is, that's the value of it.
Yeah.
It's so cautious, meticulous. They verify everything. They prune through everything. And I like that I'm hearing you guys say now that you're pushing for adopting ZK Snarks onto Monero. What are your thoughts on Pirate Chain?
So Pirate Chain, well, we started Zcash, right?
Sure.
Because a lot of people start, you know, ask me, you know, what are my opinions on Zcash? And Zcash is actually a much worse scenario because Zcash, of course, they have a CEO. It's a much more centrally designed system. They have dev taxes, all these kind of things.
It glows.
Yeah. Very much glows. Of course, it has a lower anonset because privacy is not the default, okay? But Zcash, there are good things we can say about it, because it does encourage a lot of development into this technology, which might not exist, you know, to be used in Monero if Zcash people weren't doing it. So I'm not, you know, I'm a Monero person, but I'm not anti any of those other chains. And the same thing goes with Pirate Chain, where I think of it, I look at it more as, okay, these people are testing this for us, right? It's a much smaller project. There's a lot less money in it, okay? So I view it as more of an experimental thing. But yes, I do think that, and of course, Monero has things that they don't. They have, you know, ASIC resistance. They don't. I don't think Pirate Chain has tail emission, does it?
No,
I don't think so. So there are other things that I think Monero does better that would also be kind of, I don't know, that would be decision makers, right? But I do think it's very, I'm not against other chains existing, although I think of myself as kind of a maximalist in the end game. I think that we're all going to be on the same standard eventually.
Of course.
I think it's good that people are doing development in all these other projects.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's see, guys, this is exactly what the value is here. Because when you invest in a technology, it's not the technology really that you're investing in, but the network of investors. And I've always said this, it's the community of contributors. Because the technology will change over time in privacy coins in Monero. But you're really investing in one another, in that we're all taking care of this, and we're very, very, we're being very meticulous and cautious, and we will be the first to call something out when it goes wrong, because we're supposed to not trust, we're supposed to verify, we're supposed to really adhere to the false ethos in every way possible. Can you please talk a little bit to anyone here and explain to them what the false ethos is?
Yeah, so I actually chided people for this in my talk, because I think this is really important. FOSS stands for Free and Open Source Software. Okay, so in the 80s and 90s, there's this thing called the free software movement that's still around today. And it is arguably much more important than cryptocurrency, because I really look at cryptocurrency as a subset of it. Now, a lot of crypto people think that it's a little different, or free software people, they don't do crypto. There's less overlap than there should be. But what free software is about is the idea that if we are using computers, we have to use computers whose source code is
auditable. People can look at them because it only takes one line of private source code that you can't see to send your private data to some server or even just ping a server, thus giving it metadata. So free software is probably the most important thing. And of course, the GNU Linux operating system comes out of that. And of course, nowadays, this is great. This wasn't the case in the 90s, but nowadays you can install all free software on your computer. And that's what I've run for years and years. And I can be confident, although I might have metadata leakage on the internet and things like that, the software that I'm running on my computer is totally secure, right? And cryptocurrency is the same thing. And I chided people in the talk saying, listen, if you're a Monero person and you laugh at people who are using custodial wallets, you really have no right to do that if you're using something like Windows or even Mac OS or things like that. And of course, that, you know, it's an awkward thing because everyone still uses it. But that's a shameful thing. Because one thing I was very surprised of, actually, when I started, because I went to free software first and then cryptocurrency, and I naturally saw the connection. But it's very surprising to me that there are many people in cryptocurrency who will be, oh, you know, no KYC, own your keys, but then they'll, you know, install, I'll store this in Google Drive or something like that. And that's, you know, I don't mean to speak about the conference, but they sent us a lot of things in Google Drive. That's a little disturbing, and I hope me bringing that up will encourage that not to happen again. So cryptocurrency is kind of a part of, it has a similar ethos. It's kind of different communities, but I guess I'm kind of right at the middle. I want to bring them closer because, you know, there are a lot of FOSS people who are like kind of cringe communists sometimes. No, there are a lot of libertarians.
Why is that? Let's talk about that. Why is that? Like, like the Electronic Freedom Foundation, like, you get that vibe.
Yeah.
Sometimes in Monero, you get that vibe. Well, there is that vibe.
It's less in cryptocurrency.
But let me tell you something. I have no problem with that because there should not be an ideological purity test for using sound money.
Yeah, I mean, Monero unites people of many different ideological persuasions, but of course they're that hardcore, like, Antifa, any money is evil, like, I don't want any of that. They're skeptical of cryptocurrency. And when the free software movement started, a lot of the guys in it were kind of communist-y. I mean, lots of them were libertarians, like this, but, you know, a loud minority, or even Richard Stallman, who's the guy I mentioned in my talk, he's kind of a leftist, like, he's not, you know, maybe a full communist, but a lot of their ethos came from the collaborative aspect. Like, they're like, we don't want corporations to control software projects. We want individual people to, we want it to be public. And there was a sense in which, like, digital communism is kind of the way that the digital world is. And what I mean by that is, in the world we're familiar with, things are scarce, right? Food is scarce. We have to produce it. All these kind of things. There's scarcity to all physical objects. But the digital world is totally different because you can copy files and send them all over the place. And a lot of FOSS people, you know, really, in the digital world, there's some sense in which you've got to be a communist in some way. Like, I
don't call it that.
Yeah.
Because
you
when
know,
I see
you get what
different.
I mean. Well, you get what I'm meaning, though. I'm not.
I see, because they're sharing code is what he's talking about.
Right.
It's open, free, and source software.
Exactly.
But this is the thing, is that there's an implicit capitalist incentive structure built within it, which is a meritocracy of who provides the best work.
Yeah.
So if you commit work, and I verify it, and I'm like, dude, you're missing this, or let's add this, then everyone will look at me as like, okay, well, maybe we should pay attention to Raph now. A little bit. There's a meritocracy within that world right?
One thing people realized, I mean, you know, when you're dealing with people you don't have a connection to, we mediate those exchanges with money. That's just how it is, because I don't know this guy. You know, he's not going to make me food for free. I'm going to pay him money. And, you know, for a friend, though, you'll make meals for your friend. You'll share stuff with your friend. And that's just naturally how things are. And it's similar in software. Originally, people were like, well, we have to have these massive corporations writing software because they need all these incentives to produce things. Actually, people in individual communities similar to Monero, right? The incentive of building a good project is actually enough. You don't need to give people bajillions of dollars to create a lot of these things. And you can now use software that is produced by average people. It's not that hard to make software, right? That's what I'm getting at. But either way, how did we get on the con? I feel like there's some point I was going to make before that.
That's fine. I'll come back to you.
Yeah.
I mean, the main thing here is that having that approach to free software is very important, because it gives us a meritocratic means of achieving what is best for all, because our incentives are aligned within this trustless network that is formed from the FOSS ethos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's important. And what the free software movement has really proven is that you can develop these tools without needing these massive monetary incentives. And that's the reason I just said what I said about Zcash. Zcash has these dev taxes, which they don't need. Like, you can add, like, Bitcoin is an example, or Monero is an example of a cryptocurrency that can exist without any of that crap.
Right.
So, and a lot of people that integrate that kind of stuff or have, you know, their random Ethereum tokens, you know, a lot of it is just a get-rich-quick scheme, even if they don't intend it to be that way. But either way, you know, we are all kind of working together and, you know, in the FOSS or the cryptocurrency sphere. And, you know, that's the whole point, to have a trustless system that you can rely on.
Alright, can you please repeat what you just said again about the FOSS ethos being reliable because a cleaning truck just went by?
They heard. No, well, I mean, it's the thing that gives us the trustless system, right? And it's the FOSS ethos is really the same as, you know, what cryptocurrency is really about. And that's why I really wish those two, I don't know, the people would be more on the same page about this kind of stuff. Because, again, it's weird to see cryptocurrency people who care about privacy and stuff, you know, using Dropbox or, you know, I don't know, Netflix or something. I'm a person, I have to have all my files on my computer, like movies, music, I don't believe, none of this streaming stuff. And the irony is, you know, people often talk about, you know, oh, they'll make memes about the Schwab stuff, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? Well, it's already the case in a lot of the digital world, right? So people have, like, you don't actually have files on your computer anymore. Your photos are in the iCloud. The music you listen to is in Spotify, and you stream it to your computer. Or the movie files you have, you know, you don't have movie files. You watch it on Netflix. You pay for all these services. But of course, there are peer-to-peer technologies like BitTorrent that, of course, you can get them immediately yourself, and you can watch them. You know, when I moved into the country, I didn't have any internet access. But thankfully, I have many media files that I've downloaded over a very long period, and I can consume them at my leisure if I choose to do that. So I think it's all kind of in the same, same thing.
You know, I think a lot of the reason why people don't use like open source options in the market is because they're not simple to use. And so you need things that are private by default and easy to use. And I think Monero is really paving the way of using private by default software. And this is a thing, because I came into cryptocurrency very much like you, in that I was using open source tools, alternative tools, and I see it as just not something that's convenient. And therefore, because it's not convenient to use, because they're still thinking about that, we call Unix approach, that layered approach to privacy, therefore it's just a niche product. And it'll continue to be a niche product. And the reality is that, no, it's not a niche product. If it's implemented correctly, and you create something that is private by default, that is elegant in design, in its simplicity for us, anyone to just use, like Monero, then it is something people will use in a simple way. We're seeing this right now with Cuba and what's happening with the Cuban community. That for the Monero community, Cuba's becoming our El Salvador right now.
Yeah. Well, I will say on open source software and free and open source software, you did mention the issue of, it's hard to use for a lot of people. And I will just say on free software, it's kind of like a kid in middle school who had acne and people have always made fun of him, but then he grew up, but people still make fun of him for his acne. Because back in the 90s, open source software sucked. Like, you had to really know what you're doing, really know how to use an operating system, even install the crap, and it was very hard to use. Nowadays, I know people in my life who do not know anything about technology, I will tell you, and they are using Linux very easily. The difference has really, like, Windows especially has gotten really bad. It's now a big hassle, all these updates, all these other things. And Linux distributions have come so far. Now, of course, it is still a difficulty to people, but I think the difficulty is 99% just unfamiliarity. I don't know about this world. It's confusing.
Right.
And a lot of times also, proprietary systems, you know, like Google Drive or things like this, they'll kind of instill anti-patterns in your brain. Like, the reason Google Drive exists is because Google wants your data on their servers, and they can use that for things. And then they will say, oh, here are all these things you can do by giving us your data, right? Before Google Drive, what did people use? Well, firstly, Google Drive isn't really that necessary. If you just have a computer, you can send things to people. But, you know, you have a USB drive, right? And of course, you can install Nextcloud and things like this, which are an equivalent of Google Drive and that are free and open source. But I think a lot of the times, these companies will get you into doing things that computing in ways that isn't really optimal anyway, right? And so what's my alternative to Google Drive that I use is there's none. I get along fine without it. If I wanted to install Nextcloud, I could use rsync to sync up files with my server and get them other places. Like, there are different tools for that, but a lot of the times for, like, streaming especially, there are no open source equivalents because we don't need that. We have files on our computer, you know what I mean? So I will just say that no one should be worried about switching to Linux. Like, my uncle, who doesn't know anything about technology, his son put him on Linux. He's got along fine. I have a friend who's probably the most tech retarded person I've ever met in my life. He doesn't just use Linux, but he uses my custom configuration of Linux where everything's a key binding and stuff, and he figured it out.
Well, you know what's a really good product in the market right now? System 76 with Pop OS. It's so easy to... It comes ready to go.
So, yeah, they do a good job. Now, I've never used their products, but they are higher tier over most Linux distributions in terms of their loyalty to free and open source software, because a lot of Linux distributions, sadly, have sold out, and they will, you'll install them, and then they'll advertise software you shouldn't be running, like Google Chrome, Steam, things like this. But Pop OS is a great example in System 76, whatever it is. They're a great example of people who are still pretty true to the ideal. They even install Core Boot on their computers. So if you don't know anything about open source and you want to get a new laptop, you might want to get in a System 76, or there are other companies that do things similar to that. That's a good entry point if you don't know how to install Linux or don't have a friend who can do it. If you do have a Linux friend, they will probably happily install Linux on your computer for you, because that's how they are. You know, they can't shut up about it sometimes.
All right, let's just hypothetically. Have you read the book, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress?
I have that book. I've never read it.
Okay, where they would, like,
a lot of his stuff.
They would hand over each other like a flash drive with like how to, you know, the rebellion, how to. Okay, so if you were to, let's say, send a packet to a people in need in a tyrannical state,
yeah,
and you had a means to get that to them on how to use Monero and plug and play easy to use Linux service so that they can start operating in an alternate economic system to survive tyranny, let's figure out what would be, like, in your opinion, what would that packet contain? Like, easy to use in a flash drive for people to start using.
In a flash drive?
Yeah.
Well, if we could send them a computer, it would be nice to send them one with Linux on before.
Okay.
So, of course, they actually don't even need the flash drive, because pretty much in any country, you know, Linux distributions are not blocked. There are so many of them. You can get them. You can download them yourself. You can put them on your own USB drive, and you can hook them up to any computer and install Linux, right? The nice thing, in the same way that Monero is uncensorable,
free and open source software is not censorable in this. Like, it would require so much work to actually go through and, you know, ban all these websites that host it and ban torrents that host it and all these kind of things. So really, actually, you don't have to send them anything. That's going to be my answer. Because right now...
That's awesome. Great answer, yeah.
Yeah, because as long as they have the internet, they can get a Linux distribution, they can put it on a USB. If they don't have a USB in that country, I guess you can send them a blank USB. You can just connect that with a Linux ISO on it. You can install it on your computer. You don't need anything special. It can install it. Linux actually has much better hardware support than Windows or anything else nowadays. The only thing they have trouble with is NVIDIA GPUs, if you're like a big gamer. But that's because NVIDIA deliberately tries to screw things up, frankly. Linux is really complete. You don't have to install all these drivers on it. A lot of it is just a lot easier. So you can get that. So you can download Monero. You can download Linux. You can install them on any computer in any country. So yeah, I don't think we need to ship anyone. You have what you need. So,
okay, awesome. So people are asking right now themselves as they hear this conversation, okay, I want to jump into Linux. I want to start using this. Where do they go? What do you recommend?
So I will say that we should explain how Linux works. Linux is not created by one company that controls how it looks and, you know, how it functions. There are many different desktops on it. They look very differently. And so what Linux users do is they compile software they like and they put them in distributions, or distros. And so the distro that I use is what's called Artix Linux. That's ARTIX. ArtixLinux.org. And I use, you know, the difficult-to-install version that you do on the command line, because I like customizing things. But you can go there and download... they have many different choices for what you want your desktop to look like at the beginning. And of course, the thing with Linux is you can actually change anything of it. You can install new programs, you can switch out how the user interface looks very easily. But that's the distribution I use. PopOS is another good one for newbies. I prefer Artix because I like Arch-based distributions, because I just find it, as you get better at Linux, it's a little easier to transition into doing more fancy stuff. So that's why I recommend it to people. So that would be the place to start. You would go there, and you can download, you know, many different choices for which distribution, or like which flavor, like what desktop you want, and then really any of them will work. Install it, you know, have fun. So that's basically all you have to do. And there's so many tutorials. I mean, that I do, but other people as well. Just dragging you through every little thing in Linux. Like, you want to know a good program for using for music or something else on Linux. They're not just ways of searching in Linux itself, like a kind of package manager, but there's a massive community of people doing it that you can feed off of.
So, right now... you were saying that you look forward to a future where Monero adopts ZK Snarks.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Talk to us about this.
Okay, so Monero has a lot of problems. They're little problems, like if you're a new user or something, don't fret about them. But just a couple of the problems with ring signatures in particular. Firstly, when you send a transaction on Monero, it's not just your transaction that shows up. It's in a ring signature with a lot of other transactions. And that makes the Monero blockchain much bigger, because a transaction is like, I don't know exactly the proportion, but it's like 10 times as much as a Bitcoin transaction in terms of how big it is. And that means that eventually, if Monero has a wider and wider use case and more people are using it, the blockchain is going to start accelerating far faster than Bitcoin. And that's going to be a problem for people hosting their own nodes. And of course, in Monero, if you're using it right, you should really always have a copy of your own blockchain if you're sending transactions. So the problem is even more important in Monero. So zero-knowledge proofs, if you don't know what these are, they will blow your mind when you really understand. I'm not even the best to explain them, but...
It's weird to explain them, yeah.
The idea of a zero-knowledge proof is it's a way of proving that a statement is true without knowing what the content of the statement is, right? It's a really weird cryptographic thing that people can do. You can look it up and learn all about Alibaba's cave and all the funny metaphors they use to explain it, but it's cryptographic magic, and it's probably a development... maybe even bigger than proof of work in terms of its ramifications, because So for Monero, firstly, we're going to be slimming down transactions. Secondly, there are vectors for attack on Monero, okay? So a lot of times people say the EAE attacks, the end to end, like, so the idea behind this is, you know, let's say you get Monero on an exchange and transfer that to a private wallet. Now, that's private Monero, but the exchange does know that this transaction that's on the blockchain is legitimate. It's not on the block. Not everyone knows it, but the exchange at least knows that. So if they see that output move around, and it's going to be moving around and ring signatures, so it's going to be, they're going to be phonies and there are going to be real ones. But if that transaction output eventually ends up at that same exchange, well, they can say, oh, well, this transaction went this direction. We don't know who it's been going to because we're using stealth addresses, but it can see where it's gone. And that means that they can eliminate the duplicate, like where that transaction output has been used in another ring signature, they can eliminate those duplicates. And then
if they reuse the same wallet to go back into the exchange.
So even if you're, no. So
because once you're out of the exchange and you move amongst Monero.
So that's true, but you can still see there are different transactions that are happening. And all you know is we know for a fact as an exchange that this transaction began here.
Right.
We also know where it ended. Now, there are many other transactions on the blockchain that are gobbledygook, but it's like a big maze puzzle where a lot of the mazes don't work. Like, oh, if we assume that this is the real transaction, we know that it couldn't have ended up at this exchange. So you can start eliminating decoy transactions. Now, that's a big problem long-term if a lot of people put out their view keys or use custodial exchanges with Monero. And I don't think it's like a catastrophic issue right now, but it's another reason why zero-knowledge proofs just avoid this problem altogether. Right. So those are the two big main reasons. Blockchain size, and they avoid attacks like this, but also it's just more elegant technology.
Right.
It's much more minimalistic.
Do you know like the math, the math behind it?
Well, one thing.
The actual numbers, do you know it by heart? I don't.
Can I tell you how elliptic curve cryptography works?
No. Okay, the anonymity set is the lowest with the moment you leave the exchange.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But as you stay out of the exchange and you just transact P2P,
that's true. It gets bigger.
The anonymity set gets big.
But the issue is if someone transfers to that same exchange on the other end, the exchange can basically do a pincer attack. And they can, by process of elimination, they can say, well, we know this transaction is a decoy. We know that this one's a decoy. Because if that had been the actual course of that money, then it wouldn't have ended up where we know that it ends up. So that's the big issue with that. So
yeah, guys, like this is okay. So this is the thing, guys. As you can tell, look at the honesty of the Monero community. The Monero community is so honest that they will even tell you. They will be the first ones to call out anything that is even suspicious or even mathematically probable in the future or somehow susceptible to being surveilled. The level of honesty in the Monero community is really what makes the Monero community valuable. And this is that open free and source software ethos, guys. And it is that is, in my opinion, what matters most when we talk about privacy coins. It's not even the technology. It's really that skeptic mentality.
And there are a lot of other problems that we still haven't solved with cryptocurrency. Blockchains themselves, right? Can Monero scale to a global scale? I think right now, I don't think it can. I don't think anything can because the blocks, on my slides, I mentioned that Visa has, something like 1,700 transactions a second. Okay. Even if you had really small transaction sizes, weights on your blockchain, that gets big really quick, right? So in the future, and there are people who do things like block lattices. I don't know if you ever heard of Nano that does this, that do things a little bit differently. But it's important for everyone to know the technology that they're using. You don't have to know everything. Again, I don't know the magic behind zero knowledge proofs, right? I can't explain that to you. You can read papers on it. It's very interesting. But it's important for us to all be aware of the flaws of Monero, because if you are just there's a fanboy for anything, you're going to be screwed. This is what Bitcoiners do. We don't want to fall into the hole that they're falling into.
That's beautiful. Look, and the thing is that, like, this is what's crazy about the Monero community, is that we had block size wars, hash wars in Bitcoin, but when you come to Monero, all the real gangsters from all communities are here. Ethereum, Bitcoin Cash. When it comes to block, I don't know if you know this about me, but when it comes to like the block war, the hash wars in Bitcoin, I'm an extreme big blockers.
Oh, yeah.
Me. The rest of the crypto vigilante team are all small blockers.
Yeah.
Which is funny. And we all come to more. The crypto vigilante is really privacy, sound money maximalist. That's really what we are. But I can come here and like talk to someone like a lot of the Monero contributors and talk about ideas like. I was, when it came to like ASIC resistance with Monero, I've always been for let them compete with ASICs. Because for me, I see a market-driven competition of miners that they can scale to enterprise levels in the future as Monero. It may lessen the amount of nodes in the network, but the amount of nodes would then be market-driven. Kind of like the car industry, right? There's no central planner saying we need this amount of car manufacturers on the planet, but market-driven through competition, the car industry gives us like a good 20 car companies that are competing and being the best car company on the planet. So I'm open to that.
Yeah.
At least I entertain that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the big problem again, like when people stake their egos in cryptocurrency, they a lot of times not get into the nitty gritty, like the game theoretics of how things work. One thing I didn't talk about in my talk, but I do think is important. Monero has tail emission. Okay. Bitcoin doesn't. And if you do the math, well, I will just say Bitcoin has never really, like, no one has really put out a series of papers doing the game theoretics of in what scenarios can Bitcoin continue after you've mined all Bitcoin. Because if you do the math, I remember doing, when I did a stream with Kevin Watt, I kind of did this.
Us big blockers have done that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Gavin Anderson just wrote about that, actually.
Yeah, so if you extrapolate it, so right now block rewards in Bitcoin are like $250,000. If you extrapolate, let's assume that, you know, miners want the same kind of rewards once all the Bitcoins are mined. Well, that's basically going to amount to at least a $40 transaction fee. And that's assuming that the technology 100 years from now, you're not going to have anyone, we don't need any more money to mine, which is not the case. It's going to be much more competitive. We're going to need much more hash power and stuff like that. So Bitcoin, like, has never really solved this problem. Like, the issue of kind of tail emission, which I really think that Monero, I don't know if I want to say it's the perfect solution, but it's a much more sustainable solution because we can at least be sure there's some mining that's going to occur.
Exactly. You know, Ed Bugos, director of research at the Crypto Vigilante, calls this, and this is his argument for why Monero is a better store of value.
Yes.
And that's so fucking, like, when he said that to me, I was like, whoa, dude, you're right.
Yeah.
Because we are assuring the financial health of miners in Monero onto the future.